This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
If you want to join us,
we'll do it live.
Here we are. The number is 603-283-6160. Talking about the death of the newspaper business. It is, I would say, in its death throes. It hasn't quite gasped its final breath, but boy, it does not look good, especially when you actually look at some of the numbers which we are sharing here when it comes to Gannett, the country's largest newspaper company. And they've gotten that way by gobbling up a bunch of local papers over decades and then consolidating and cutting and cutting and cutting. And as we learned, they've cut, as of 2018, when they, shortly after the 2018, they merged with what was then the number two newspaper company, apparently called Gatehouse, which I'd never heard of. But they merged together and then proceeded to then cut more than half.
Well, if they're the number two company, they should be called S-House.
Yeah, they're gone now, and the staff has been just slashed and burned. We can continue with the discussion here. Of course, your calls and thoughts are also welcome. It's Ian Pecos, Mountaineer, and Captain Kickass in the studio. We have Major Payne on the line in Michigan. Go ahead, Major.
Hey guys, good evening.
Hey, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I just had a thought on how these old dinosaur paper companies might be able to revive their image a little bit.
Okay.
You guys probably aren't familiar with it, but they used to make a gizmo that you could take regular black and white newspaper and make logs out of it. You know, crank it, and it wraps them up, and you put a couple of big bread ties around it, and you can make a newspaper pile of fire logs.
Right, before Duraflame.
Yeah, but these ads they have now, this glossy paper that the Sunday and weekend editions are just overloaded with, and will pretty near kill a paper boy.
Yep.
Buddy of mine, you can do the free press. I did the Ipsy press. Those free presses, the Sunday paper would kill you. You had to have a wagon or a bicycle or something.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, that glazed paper doesn't burn. That somehow, I don't know what that glazing's made of, but I don't reckon it recycles worth of beans either because
it does, but it's not nearly as recyclable as it used to be. Also, too, one of the early survival techniques that I learned was newspaper is a hell of an insulator. And in fact, in some of the older homes, I'm surprised it's not talked about here in the New England
area.
It's in the walls. They used old newspapers for insulation because it was a readily available substance.
Right, and you just throw it away. Otherwise,
everybody just throws them away or whatever, burns them or whatever.
I've torn down a lot of houses or, you know, remodeled or whatever that had newspapers in the wall. They also used to use a lot of red oak leaves because those don't break down either. Red oak is a very rot-resistant wood, and I guess the leaves have the same tendency to them. The bugs don't like them, and, you know, it's good.
Well, I got to tell you, I have found it absolutely terrible to burn those papers. I mean, they smell absolutely awful. They make a lot of smoke. They'll burn fast, at least, but it's not real good for that purpose either.
Yeah, if you put a stack of them in a burn barrel or whatever, you got to go keep stirring that thing,
right,
and then you end up with like three times the ash you would normally out of a standard wood product.
Well, paper, if it's just layered on top of paper, is not going to burn well because you got to get some surface area.
Yeah,
you got to get oxygen in there.
It needs a little air.
Right. Major, you're one of our, I would say, you know, you're one of our older callers. You know, what are you, in your 50s, 60s?
I'm over 60.
Over 60. Do you still read the newspaper?
I haven't been a subscriber to the newspaper ever that I can think of.
Ever. Okay. All right.
One of the households.
I used to deliver it and make money off of them when I was a kid.
That's
but
funny.
No, I've never subscribed.
You never got high on your own supply then, basically.
Oh, nice. Yeah. One of the households I grew up in subscribed to the newspaper daily and weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And the other day I was at home in the John, you know, doing the John thing. and I got my phone in my hand, as many people do.
Right.
And it occurred to me that before the cell phone, there would just be a giant stack of newspapers in front of me, right? Whoever owned the place, you know, that's where the papers went. And so you could be like, what was that article I read last Tuesday? You could, like, thumb through them and, like, get down to, like, oh, yeah, here's last Tuesday's paper or whatever, and find the article you wanted to read out of it. And so it's weird that, like people still read the news or whatever, but, like, you know, now it's just on your phone instead of, you know, physically in front of you.
Well, you could tell who ruled the throne in the house when you went into the bathroom. I mean, was there Field and Streams and Popular Mechanics in there, or was there good housekeeping?
Right. Was it, yeah, Popular Mechanics. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that used to be.
I used to have The Onion here.
At the
bathroom here, back when they had the print version of The Onion, but they stopped printing it in like 2011 or something like that.
Soldier of Fortune was one I remember.
We've been pretty hard on newspapers, but I gotta say one really, really nice thing. One thing that they have that is absolutely superior to modern media. You can't change it from a distance. So if they print this story and you read this story, like, you can, if you feel like it, hold on to that sucker, and they will never be able to change single little piece of that story, and you can show that to other people. True. Whereas these days, like, not only will they change what is the content, they will change the metadata to show that they never changed the content.
Yeah, the larger newspapers, I know of one particular, I'm not going to name it, because I don't want to give them any publicity, but they would run an early edition of the Sunday paper on Saturday. So you could pick up your Sunday edition, like, late on a Saturday evening at your local apothecary or get it home delivered or whatever. And occasionally...
News from the future!
Yeah, and occasionally the actual Sunday edition would have either a different story or they would change the headline slightly to adjust for whatever faux pas they may have committed.
It could be new information.
And then eventually they adjusted to, like, regional stuff. They're like, oh, well, this is, like, you know, if you're a big city, but, like, you're delivering to other states that are near the big city, they'll make a different version for, like, the state nearby instead of the state that the city is in. So they adjusted to that. So, like, the headlines will be slightly different. So if you pick up, like, I don't know, like a New York Times, you know, in, I don't know, New Hampshire, for example, it might be different than if
regional.
Than if you picked it up in New York.
Hey, Major, thanks for the call tonight. I appreciate it. Let's go to a former guy that worked in the news business. Dave Ridley is on the line. As I recall, Dave, and I know you were calling for a different reason, and we can get to that in a moment, but you used to work at a Boston television station as an editor back in the day, and I presume other places prior to that. You know, do you care to weigh in at all on the consolidation and the sort of the failing of the news business?
Yeah, I was just a video editor. I wasn't like a, you know, an assignments editor or anything high up. Yeah, I don't know. It's just yet another nail in the coffin, I guess. It's just what's for me is just sad is just harder and harder to get a piece of information out. You know, when I first moved to New Hampshire in 04, I couldn't wait to write my first letter to the editor. You know, I wrote a lot of letters to the editor and they always seemed to get published. And there were lots of ways to get information out. Web forums, talk radio, and everything. Other than talk radio, all of these things seem to have attrited.
Yeah, that's a good point. I know that you've personally suffered the sort of the restrictions that have been put in place on some of these online platforms, YouTube, for instance. Did they delete your channel entirely, or did you just get demonetized on YouTube?
I was never monetized. I had you know, advertisers would advertise with me directly, and of course, you were one of my advertisers, so I didn't need or sign up for YouTube to pay me anything.
Right.
But in 2020, they started taking down my videos, and some of them, and they said if I get too many strikes in a week, they'll take down everything. So I figured, well, they're going to keep giving me strikes because they're going to strike older and older videos. So if I just put nothing up, that will make the channel stay up for longer. So I had to stop uploading around 2021, I guess.
So the Ridley Report channel is still on YouTube, but is not receiving new content, is what you're saying?
Yeah, it's youtube.com/Ridley Report.
But and you also Ridley moved Report. Over to some other places, right? You're on Odyssey, and what's the other big one that you're on?
BitChute.
Okay. All right.
But it's not practical. I can only get about 200 hits per video or 300 hits.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not worth shooting the videos. So that's been the case for a couple of years. And so that's the thing, you know, as these institutions have been dying, like papers, well, you would just expect, of course, something else is going to come up in their place. And there was something in their place that worked even better, and it was called YouTube. It was old YouTube, and it was an easy way to get information out, and it was an easy way to get information in. And they've made it difficult, of course, to get information out, and it's difficult, also more difficult than it used to be, to watch YouTube because there's so many interruptions and ads and stuff like that, and
mm-hmm.
demands that you sign in and what. So they took the thing that was the one thing that was working, and you know they destroyed it. And it wasn't it's not just YouTube that destroyed themselves. It was the federal government that was a large part of that.
Yeah, that is interesting that we went from a relatively unmolested platform to one that is highly controlled, highly restrictive on the content that can be shared there. And it's sad to see, you know, you, Dave, who were such a prolific producer. There are so many people who, when you talk to them about moving to New Hampshire, like, you know, if you're just talking to people at, like, the Porcupine Freedom Festival, yeah. and you say, what was it that brought you to New Hampshire? So many of them will say, The Ridley Report,
right.
Dave Ridley. And then they'll, like, chime out with one of your little tunes that you do, because you do these little songs for your advertisers. And it's just the videos you've done have been so meaningful to people over the years. It's a shame to see them go away simply because you don't feel like they're in a place or that they can be put in a place where they can get enough attention where they're monetized. But, I mean, I want to ask you this on this point, though, Ridley. I mean, when you first started on YouTube, you surely were only getting a few dozen views per video, right? Like, you had to start from zero, so there must have been a time at which a couple hundred views would have been pretty good for you, right?
No, I was thinking about this the other day when it only took a couple of weeks to get to a point where I was getting thousands of hits per
wow.
video, maybe a month. But
the heavy metal musician in me is totally jealous because, like, you know, getting hits for something like I'd be happy with a couple hundred
right.
hits on something that I put up.
Like, I do that all the time. I put stuff up and it gets a few hundred hits. It's just like you just move on and that's
yeah.
fine. And then that's the way it is. But I get it. You know, your time's valuable. You're used to getting a certain amount of views or whatever. And maybe it's because you were so early in. Maybe that's a factor where, you know, Ridley, you were one of the earliest, I would say, producers on YouTube back in when did you start? Was it like 2008 or 7 or 5? When was it?
2007.
Okay. Yeah, so that's pretty early for YouTube days. That's like just after, I think, Google had made the purchase of the platform around that same time frame. So maybe it was simply because there weren't as many producers on there. And nowadays, like we were saying, anybody who wants to can go and try to make it. But the problem is there's so much content, it just buries everything. How do you
understand
out?
In my opinion, Ridley's an artist, and he's entertaining
mm-hmm.
With his content. And so this is why they started giving him strikes and that kind of thing.
Right.
That this man is dangerous because not only does he have a message which rings true to a bunch of people, but he's entertaining about it in the process, mm-hmm. and that's a rare combination to have.
Yeah, and a lot of this all
boil down
to making sure that interesting ideas don't get out there.
Right.
So we were asking why does the state prop up these old ones, and we went over the fact that they're reliable and they in that they will prop up the state and that they have some amount of trust with them. And what that contrasts with is the idea of getting out these ideas, getting different narratives going, getting different information to different people. Now, if you actually want to find out what's going on, that's exactly what you want. You want a bunch of different people to have different pieces of information
yep.
and then talk to each other so that they can form a more complete picture of the situation.
Yep.
Whereas if you want control, what you want is a single narrative that everyone has heard.
Yep.
Well, I would just like to register, my wish that the Ridley Report would come back in some shape or form, you know, even if it's once a week or once every other week or just whenever you feel inspired to do something. I would like to encourage you, Ridley, to, get back to it to some extent. Like, even though it might only get a couple hundred views, the thing is, you never know when one of them is going to take back off, right? Like, you never know when one of those videos is going to hit just right and you know, go viral or semi-viral or whatever, and then all of a sudden your channel gets another 100 subscribers or another 1,000 subscribers or whatever. I hope that that you'll consider, you know, bringing some sort of form of the Ridley Report back. I know a lot of people came here because of it, and it's a shame to see it fall by the wayside.
Yeah, I don't see it as a permanent. What's the right? I don't feel like it's permanently deleted. I'm waiting for the stars to align so that, you know, it can be done again practically.
Okay.
And one thing I suggest, I think I called in about this about a year ago, is, you know, if there are people that have platforms that already have viewers, and anything you put there gets views. And it would be, the appropriate thing would be for me to put my videos on someone's platform that's already getting 1,000 hits per video, and then I'll get 1,000 hits per video just like them. But I have never had anyone offer to take me up on that, except for Joa, who he's great, but he doesn't really get enough hits.
I've seen him get tens of thousands of
YouTube.
I think he gets tens of thousands of views on some of his videos. I think it just depends on the content. But anyway, you were calling for some other reason tonight, Ridley, and what did you want to share?
Well, I just wanted to sort of continue my little series, which I call this year in Free State History, and
okay.
Tell you a couple of the things that kind of following 20 years ago, 2003, what happened in our movement that was interesting 20 years ago that people are now forgetting, and I'm trying to make sure it's remembered.
You're referring to the Free State Project, which, of course, is the migration of roughly 20,000 people, hopefully someday. I don't think we've hit that number yet. But there have been 20,000 people who have signed a pledge to move to New Hampshire together and to work towards more freedom in our lifetime. It's a great little project. It's the reason the three of us are here in the studio tonight. We actually have The Free State, or Free State, the documentary film that's actually shooting in the studio. So it's a good topic, timely topic, Ridley. What was the history you wanted to share that happened in 2003 for the Free State Project?
So there were two things that happened, and I've had trouble finding records on this. It could have been early 2004, but I believe it was mid or late 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Two very interesting things happened. One was that I guess we had our first arrest of a person in our movement who was sort of arrested in the line of duty.
Really?
And that was Tim Condon. He was trying to hand out flyers for the Free State Project at a gun event.
Where?
And they arrested him. They arrested him for it.
Where was this?
I think it was in Florida.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, because Tim, I don't think, has ever moved to New Hampshire. He's always been an active supporter of the Free State Project. He's a supporter of Free Talk Live to some extent. And, in fact, he even wrote a letter to the judge in the Crypto 6 case.
Nice.
He's an attorney down in Florida. He's one of the earliest, I think, joiners of the Free State Project.
It's surprising to me that somebody would join and then, you know, join the Free State Project, then also hand out flyers about the Free State Project at like some gun rally, but not make the move. That's weird.
Yeah.
Well, I think he has ties in Florida, but he has bought land a long time ago in New Hampshire. I don't know if he still owns it or not, but I didn't even know that he had not moved in all these years. I thought he kind of.
Not that
here.
I'm aware of. At least the last time I spoke with him, which was a few weeks ago, he was still in Florida.
Okay.
Sounds like he hasn't put his money where his mouth is.
Can you count a Free Stater getting arrested if they haven't actually moved to New Hampshire as an arrest related to the Free State Project? I mean, that seems like a stretch, Ridley.
I think it's perfectly related.
Right.
Well, it's the first one even tangentially related to the Free State Project.
What was this?
I think it may have happened before the state was picked.
Okay.
What was the second thing?
So the second thing that happened was, I guess, the first demonstration. Again, I'm not positive this was in 2003. It could have been early 2004. There was a demonstration against the Free State Project. It was the first time people had ever organized.
Wow, that was pretty early.
A demonstration.
Where
a demonstration against libertarians.
Where was this?
I don't remember, but Mike Fisher was there, and he... I think he went out and, like, he gave out brownies to the people who were demonstrating against this or something like that.
Wow.
So it was brilliant. So Fisher was kind of like a Gandhi guy.
Yeah, Fisher. I remember him. He was the guy that got arrested. I don't know if it was like 2005. He got arrested for doing an unlicensed manicure, if I recall correctly.
Well done, sir. Well done.
He went out. If I recall, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Ridley, he went to the actual bureaucracy, like in Concord, the regulatory agency of manicurists, and he and I think it was Kat Canning, who's actually moved back to New Hampshire now. She's living here again. She was there, and I believe she was the recipient of the unlicensed manicure, and he was the giver of the unlicensed manicure, and the cops, they brought them out, and they arrested him for giving that unlicensed manicure.
You can't have nice nails unless they're government approved.
That's right. And did I tell that one right, Ridley, to your recollection?
That is correct.
Yeah. Another sad story, because he's another one that moved away. I mean, there's been so many
I'm just trying to figure out, like, how would you even do a protest against the Free State Project when they haven't even decided where it's going to be yet?
In 2004, they had decided.
Well, this was probably in late 2003 after the state.
Oh, so that was in New Hampshire then, where they did the protest.
This is one of the first things that happened after the state got picked. That was significant.
Interesting.
And,
not in my backyard, mister.
They weren't just demonstrating against us. I guess Governor Benson was giving a speech, and they were really angry that he had endorsed us and invited us to move here.
They're still angry over it. 20 years later, they're still butthurt about that governor saying he welcomed the Free State Project.
How dare the governor of the Live Free or Die state invite people to move here to live more freely?
Right. Thank you, Ridley, for the call tonight, man. Thanks for sharing the story with us. I appreciate it.
You highlight the ridiculousness. Perfect.
Let's go there. Josie is on the line in Virginia. Go ahead, Josie. Hello? Josie? Virginia? Going twice?
Josie. Hey,
she's not there after all. Let's go to this caller. Caller, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Kevin in Florida. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. You're on the air. What's on your mind, Kevin?
Just want to make a couple of quick points. It's really terrific that you folks are covering the legacy media and the true radio history and all the results, the reasons for having print media. Just a quick point about the esotericness of this. Esoteric is only hidden if people don't go looking for the truth and use to protect themselves like you, gents, and the rest of the Free State people are doing up there in Keene. I appreciate you guys partnering with 93.3 down in Tallahassee, since I haven't used the internet for so long. If I hadn't found you folks on 93.3, I wouldn't be listening to Free Talk Live.
All right, thank you, WVFT, great station.
Free State people, and I wouldn't know about all the rest of the stuff that you prepared folks to do.
Well, Kevin, just hold that thought. We're gonna, if you want to stay with us here and get to whatever point you were gonna make here, just stand by. We'll bring it back, Kevin, in Florida, in the Tallahassee area. If you want to jump into the phones, we have them here at 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. And this is Free Talk Live. We got more coming up.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA News Update. The legal team for former President Trump has until Monday to respond to special counsel Jack Smith's motion for a protective order. The judge denied his lawyer's 3-day extension. Smith filed the motion after Trump's Truth Social post, quote, "If you go after me, I'm coming after you." More than a dozen people suffered injuries when a Greyhound bus overturned on a highway south of Atlanta. The Texas Attorney General is appealing a ruling that would have relaxed the state's abortion ban. On Friday, a judge temporarily halted the abortion ban for women who have dangerous pregnancy complications. The Kinks keyboardist John Gosling has died, Variety reported. Gosling played on 10 Kinks albums during the 1970s. He was 75. Barbie will win the weekend box office again as it approaches $1 billion globally. Jerry Barmash, USA News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
I had no idea it would destroy my life. But before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
It's Free Talk Live. And join the show here, the number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash. That is digital cash. It is a cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. And there are a variety of ways that you can spend Dash. One of them was something called Dash Direct, which we promoted for some time here on Free Talk Live. That sadly, and I know for you, Captain, this was a real bummer because you were a big user of Dash Direct prior to Dash even sponsoring Free Talk Live. You were a huge fan of this app because it allowed you to go and easily buy gift cards at a discount. In most cases, for major brands, companies you certainly are probably doing business with today. Big ones that you've heard of, over 100-something thousand all across the United States. Unfortunately, the company behind Dash Direct went out of the crypto business due to all the government crackdowns that have been going on, from what I understand. But the good news is, Dash Direct wasn't the only provider of discounted gift cards for Dash. Bitrefill.com has been accepting Dash for years, and they have a ton of big-name retailers and brands, including grocers, gas stations, phone refill cards, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. So you can actually live off your Dash using Bitrefill.com, and many of their gift cards also come with a discount. So it ain't over. You just got to go check out bitrefill.com.
Actually, prior to using Dash Direct, Bitrefill was one of the things on my list. And there's a few other sites that do similar things.
Yes.
I don't know that Dash is part of these other sites, but Bitrefill certainly was the number one go-to before Dash Direct.
Yeah, and they got a huge selection, just like Dash Direct did. So be sure you check them out. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies. It's widely available on exchanges and in multi-crypto wallets, plus now on the decentralized Maya protocol, which is a decentralized exchange, so you no longer have to join centralized exchanges. to get your hands on some Dash. It is easy to get. It's easy to use Dash. You can start by learning more at Dash.org. And thanks to the Dash Decentralized Autonomous Organization for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. You can visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. That's Dash.org.
I was able to buy, I bought a jigsaw at the Home Depot with Dash.
Mm-hmm.
On demand using Bitrefill.
Nice.
Now, most people probably aren't going to be able to do this. I had to fire up a VPN because if you just connect to the Home Depot's regular Wi-Fi, if you try to do anything that like their Wi-Fi doesn't like, it's going to like, we don't know why we can't access this site or whatever. So fire up a VPN. Go to the automated checkout, the self-checkout, and then it's like, how do you want to pay? Or go to the card-only lane, and then you're like, oh, yeah, gift card. And then you could just stand there for a while, and if somebody's like, hey, can I help you, sir? Like, no, I'm just messing with the Wi-Fi. It's giving me troubles. I'll be all right in a minute, right? And so you buy yourself enough time to actually do the transaction in Bitrefill for the exact amount.
The exact amount.
And then, you just scan it. It's a QR code. You point it at the thing, or you pull the scan gun,
it
at the thing. And like, boom, 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 it's done. So if you want to, you can still do on-demand gift card transactions.
Or you can just buy the gift card in advance.
Or you just
carry a balance,
which most other people do. Yeah.
Very cool. Let's go back to the phones here. We still have Kevin with us on the line in Florida listening to WVFT in Tallahassee.
Hello, guys.
Kevin, what did you want to share tonight?
I will be quick because I know I tend to talk too much, but I never knew you could do that with Dash. You did that recently.
I did, yeah. Couple days ago.
I'm actually going to investigate Dash, for crying out loud. I didn't know you could use it like that. I will be looking into that. I wanted to point out, like you gents were talking earlier tonight, about how paper news, I think the newspaper you're talking to might have been the Valley News. Because years ago when I was younger, there was a newspaper like that.
You're talking about, just to bring our listeners up to speed, Kevin, you're referring to there was a paper in the Upper Valley of New Hampshire that was going under, and the government stepped in.
Upper Valley.
Right, the federal, or not, sorry, not the federal, but the state government stepped in with taxpayer money to bail them out.
Simply because they were one of the primary newspapers that covered that whole area of the Upper Valley from White River Junction well over almost to, not Franconia, but far enough. Anyways, the point that I wanted to make out is that anybody who's interested, as you guys are, in bringing out the news and truth, you guys should know about the InternetArchive.org.
Oh, yeah.
Gutenberg.org. Do you guys have Gutenberg.org?
I'm not familiar with Gutenberg.org, but I do know of the Internet Archive.
It's a website that has been putting books from the 1200s forward onto ebooks.
Right. Because there's something about if something's old enough, there's no copyright and that kind of a thing, so they can put whatever.
And there is all sorts of very, very interesting books from the reconstruction of the war between the states and 5440 or fight, which had to do with the Mexican war with the United States, the sovereign states, over Texas's entry, and many, many other books. All one need do is look. There's well over 60,000 texts there that need to be read in order for people, men and women, to comprehend what's going on.
What's the URL for that?
Gutenberg. Gutenberg.org.
Gutenberg.org, yes. It's they used to be called Project Gutenberg, but that's what it is. It's Gutenberg.org, and it's a group of volunteers that have been scanning stuff since it was a bulletin board at 115 kilobaud.
Nice.
So I used to use that myself.
That's amazing.
But to point out the value of paper newspapers, part of my research from 10, 20 years ago was an article that is older than me. This is August 1967. Your Concord Monitor from you guys' neck of the woods, so to speak. I granted it's Concord, but that's still who you folks have to deal with. The article is from August 4th or 5th because it references an advertisement for Be Guest at Sunday School on August the 6th of 1967. So this newspaper is older than I am. Mm-hmm. And it references an argument from the 1720s over the township of Rumford, which is what Concord was originally granted from King George II to the settlers of the New Hampshire colony. And what happened was when there was a bunch of men and women, farmers in Bow, who wanted to keep their homes separate from Concord, which was Rumford at the time, the Rumford people went back to King George to argue the fact that they should be removed from their land and that their land should then become part of Concord, which was still Rumford at the point. The article discusses...
So just to follow what you're saying here, let me make sure I understood. You're saying the people of the... There's a town called Bow in New Hampshire, B-O-W. It's south of Concord. You're saying the people in what was then Rumford, which became Concord apparently, wanted to annex the town of Bow into their
town?
They
wanted to take their land.
And they wanted to use the king's power to do this at the town?
Correct.
Okay.
Wow. This occurred in... let me get to the point in the article. It discusses the villagers had lost their authority to govern themselves. This is the village of Bow, because Rumford had elected Benjamin Rolfe as the representative to the assembly in 1749. When he arrived in Portsmouth, where Benning Wentworth was seated as the governor, this was long before Concord became the government of New Hampshire, the assembly refused to seat him, and the district law, which gave Rumford legal status as a self-governing community, was not renewed. Since those villagers had lost their authority to govern themselves, they could not collect taxes or provide for policing, nor could they provide for their church. Legally, no one in the village had to do anything. The reasons for the assembly refusing to seat the Rumford representative were buried in a transparent land grab dating back to 1727. The author of this article is Lorenmorrill. I do not know if the Concord Monitor has this stuff on their website. I doubt very much.
Why did you bring this up, though? I'm curious. Like, it's just a bit of history. How's it relevant?
Because of the concept of a free state where men and women choose what they want for a township, for a village, what laws they choose to govern themselves with, instead of, at this point in 1726, 27, 49, there being a King George II, specifically for them, who decided, you know, there's a point in here where one of the reverends goes to London to confront the King's Council over the argument between the settlers of Bow who want to keep themselves separate from Rumford, instead of the men and women doing like you men and women are doing, deciding for yourselves, which goes back to who owns the land. It's not a government property. You can't pick up a forest and move it. You can pick up a house. That's a piece of property. You can pick up a car. But the one who made the land is the one who owns it. And that's what, if I comprehend what you men and women are doing, is what you're attempting to do with this concept of the Free State Project.
No, it would be nice to not have to go to the king in Washington, D.C. and beg for anything at all. Hey, thanks, Kevin, for the call tonight. I appreciate it. But it just sounds to me like the more things change, the more they stay the same.
I mean, it sounds like an appeal to authority, right?
Right. There was the king in the 1700s, and now there's a king of 535 little kings together that rule over us in D.C.
Sounds like ancient Karening, right? Oh, I can't get my way dealing with the people in front of me, so I'm going
to
escalate this to your supervisor, which just happened to be in London and happened to be the king at that point.
Well, I mean, that's progress, right? What we need is just 300 million kings instead of 300.
Yes.
Well, that was supposed to be the idea of sovereignty,
right?
That was
supposed to be the idea.
But individual sovereignty.
Let's be clear. And what's
that
wacky
is the idea of individual sovereignty. It's just its application fell to the wayside.
Right. And what's wacky is the court system even acknowledged that really early on. It was Lansing versus Smith said, okay, since the revolution happened, all of the powers that used to belong to the king now have devolved onto the individuals or the states. So every single power that had been a monarch's now was each individual's. That was the idea.
Nice
good
idea.
Luck with that, though.
Yeah, it's a nice idea.
It is a nice idea.
I support that.
Well, and that's the thing. It became acceptable for these powerful people to have power over others. Oh, well, these are special law-making people. They're above you, even though they're, what, my peers? Because they can be in a court of law to judge me? Isn't that... Wasn't that the idea that we have peers to judge us instead of someone over us to be judged by?
So many good ideas. So many good ideas. So many failures to implement.
No chance it was ever going to succeed, unfortunately. Because as long as you accept the idea that there are different rules for different people, then you're going to have a system like this.
If you want to join us here, the number is 603-283-6160. We were talking about the failure of the news business, specifically the old media. We had Dave Ridley call in and bemoan the idea that even though we have access to the internet and it's cheaper now than it's ever been to create media content, you can put it together for next to zero cost. In fact, that's what Ridley used to teach. He used to have a class that he taught at the Porcupine Freedom Festival and sometimes outside of that. And you'd sign up for like, it was just like a one-day class where he would just show you how he does his Ridleyos, where he just basically shoots it in the camera. He doesn't sit down and edit the thing. He just does it on the camera, and then it's ready to go because there's no editing that he does. It's a very, very, very efficient process to get something out there, get a little news piece or an update or whatever out there. I took his class one year once upon a time, so I'm familiar with that process.
Did you make an E&O?
No, that's a terrible name for something.
Frame-and-O?
But no, I wanted to learn the his tricks of the trade. I already knew how to do video recording. I just wanted to see what, you know, what Ridley brought to the process that was different. Because he was, as I said, a professional editor working in the news business. And now he's burned out. Now he's burned out on making what are relatively low-cost videos, because to him, just getting a couple hundred views just wasn't, it to him, isn't worth doing. And it's frustrating because there's so much good content out there. There's so many good creators, but there's such a glut of options out there now. It's hard to cut through the noise.
Yeah.
And so I get where he's coming from with that frustration. It doesn't stop us here. We don't care. If only 50 people listen, we're still here.
It's not the only, we'll call it, industry that that's happened to, the music industry. I mean, this thing that I'm about to say is true.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be there were hundreds of bands selling millions of albums.
Right.
Now there's millions of bands selling hundreds of albums.
Yeah, and if you can sell 1,000, it's like you're doing great, right?
Yeah.
And so we were talking about Gannett, which is the number one news, quote-unquote, company out there, and how they've just basically slashed and burned and consolidated, taking over the number two company in 2019, then basically cutting their staff down by more than 50%. And there's just a few more numbers here that I thought were worthy of sharing from NeimanLab.org's report on just how bad it really is. Because you know these companies have been closing, right? Like businesses, newspapers have been, in many cases, going out of business entirely, not just slashing back, not just cutting back in some cases to three papers per week, which we've seen that happening in major markets. But they point out here that also Gannett, again, having eliminated more than half its jobs in 4 years, it's as if instead of merging America's two largest newspaper chains, one of them was simply wiped off the face of the earth. And that's a cut substantially deeper than the rate of newspaper revenue decline. Why? Well, one reason is that in order to get the merger done, Gannett had to take out a giant loan at high interest rates. Can you imagine taking a loan out to buy a newspaper?
That's dying.
Right. Just anyone at all getting into this particular business is like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But to then take a loan out to do it, it would be one thing if you were a millionaire or a billionaire or something, and you know the Keene Sentinel is failing here in Keene, and you're like, it's just a few million dollars. I'll rescue it. And then you just subsidize it for the rest of eternity. That would be one thing. But to go into debt to buy a newspaper, not just one newspaper, but literally hundreds of them.
So I'm wondering why some of these, like the smaller publications that are having tough times, like, why don't they go like the Patreon way? Right.
Oh, some of them are. In fact, the very Keene Sentinel we were talking about has been begging for donations for ever since COVID.
Okay, but, like, I mean, use a platform.
get your actual subscribers onto a platform, and then you can tell whether or not your content is, you know, pertinent to your subscriber base by, well, the subscribers.
Right? Well, they have that. I mean, they have the online paywall and the subscriptions and all that, but they actually have, besides just paying for a subscription, they've been doing fundraisers.
Wow.
Completely separate from paying for subscriptions. It's like, if you support local news, you should help keep us alive, basically, is what it's come down to. So Gannett, again, took out this huge loan, meaning hundreds of millions in revenues have had to be redirected to making debt payments. So to put it in perspective, in quarter four of 2022, digital subscriptions at Gannett newspapers, all of them in total, brought in $35.5 million. But the company spent more than that, $47.3 million, just on debt payments alone. And you can see this in the shrinkage in the number of newspapers that Gannett publishes. In 2019, post-merger, it owned 261 daily and 302 weekly newspapers. 3 years later, by the end of 2022, those totals were 217 daily and 175 weekly newspapers.
How does any business spend more than it takes in?
Well, I'm glad you asked.
Like,
in this economy,
like,
well, no. It's a fair question, but the way our entire monetary system works is you have to run faster and faster to stay where you are. But that also means that you can do absurd things like have a negative earnings, but you can qualify for more loans.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you qualify for more and more loans, then not only can you maintain, you can actually expand.
But if you've spent more than you're earning, what institution in their right mind would give you a loan?
You'd be surprised. Well, and that's the thing. So if you have, let's say
the government would, right?
Right. So, and I mean,
that I could see.
Yeah. And there's a certain amount
open.
Yeah. Well, there is that. But there's also a certain amount of like, okay, well, you own, you know, X number of computers or whatever machinery or something like that. Okay, so there's a collateral for some amount of loan.
Yeah.
But the thing is, once you've gotten that loan, as long as you're making payments on your loan, then anyone else can go, oh, no, they've got a great credit rating.
Mm.
Look at this loan. They've had this much loan, and they've been just making payments, and they're not paying any of the principal. That makes them a great loan. We'd love to lend you even more money.
So, practical application. I take out a $100,000 loan to open a pizza restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just delivery only. No restaurant. Right?
Right.
We're just mm-hmm. plain delivery. $100,000. I rent a space. I buy some equipment. And I operate for, we'll say, the first year. And I only make $50,000
right.
that first year. But I've borrowed $100,000. How do I stay afloat?
Well,
it's a restaurant. You're probably going under.
Well, that depends. So that's the thing. If you can find more creditors, then you can find creditors to pay off your creditors. So
I
if you've
see.
Been making okay. payments on this loan, then you can go find
so
another
if you
creditor.
Show some sort of financial growth, you know, with your profit and loss statement that you, hey, look, we're coming up, we're making more money every month or quarter, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
then you can take your entire business to a different creditor.
They might
that
take
creditor
the risk.
Might take the risk, pay off mm-hmm. your previous creditor, and then afford yeah. you some more money.
And that might sound crazy.
It does sound crazy.
If it weren't for the Cantillon effect.
What's the Cantillon effect? That sounds like a made-up number.
I don't know, man. I spent a cantillion dollars.
Well, and to be fair, we're talking about cantillionaires here. So the cantillion effect is basically that the closer you are to the money spigot, the more that actually matters. So
right.
if you are, for example, the very closest to it is the people who are passing the laws to spend the money.
Mm-hmm.
So the congressmen, they have first dibs on that money.
Right.
Second dibs is all of the people that they're paying off.
The military-industrial
right.
complex.
Military-industrial complex, giant corporations,
pharmaceutical companies,
oil companies, mm-hmm. oil companies. Now, after that, it all filters its way down until it actually flips negative for anyone who's using like anything that's a fixed amount.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing. So all these giant corporations, financial corporations that are offering the credit are real close to those money spigots. Mm. So as long as you keep making payments, it's in their best interest because the money keeps flowing.
Right.
So more and more and more money comes out, and they're just getting more and more from their payments.
And this is why, like, regular people who might have an entrepreneurial spirit, might desire, maybe they got a skill or a product or a service that they want to offer, this type of financial voodoo, if you will, this type of, like, you know, unrealistic yet seems to be happening all the time, most people are beyond the grasp of this type of information. And so they never step forward into the realm of entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to look at the news situation with, I think there's a particular perspective that's worth looking at, because we can see, like, from our perspective as a business, it seems like it's a terrible idea, right? Like, this is not going to succeed. And how long are we away from the federal government coming in and literally buying these businesses? I mean, I don't think they would do it just straight out, right? But what if they bought some stock in Gannett, for instance? What if they bought a significant chunk of stock in Gannett? Maybe it'd be the Federal Reserve or something like that.
Well, I think you and I both know that the government would love nothing more than to own all of the media.
Yeah, I mean, but would they do it in the open, or would they have some sort of sneaky way of going about doing it?
Well, yeah, they can't.
Would the government be sneaky? Yes.
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 Yeah.
The government would be sneaky. So as much as I will, you know, say, oh, well, they're dinosaurs, they're slow moving, when it comes to this stuff, the government's actually been pretty on the spot. Like, yeah, they have been moving their propaganda machine from the New York Post to Google, mm-hmm. for example. So, yeah, they have been keeping up with the times. And, yeah, if we start pulling our readership away from Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all of those ones that they have heavy influence in, then, yes, they will find sneaky ways of propping those up and making sure to give your printed money to their buddies.
Well, the other thing about that is they can spend all the taxpayer money or the printed money that they want to buy up Gannett and these other, you know, struggling media platforms. But what they can't do is force people to read them. And that's where these subscriber numbers, of course, come into play. Because we've seen Gannett is cutting dramatically the jobs. They're cutting the actual papers. They're just destroying hundreds of local papers. And
a big part of this is that they make it illegal to compete with a lot of these companies in the easiest ways. So they make higher and higher barriers to entry to any kind of competition. So then you have to see what Yahoo News says.
There's more coming up here. If you want to weigh in, the number 603-283-6160. And are you guys back with Beard Talk Live tonight?
We are. A triumphant return.
After a week off, well, much needed respite, you guys are coming back tonight. That'll be 10:30 Eastern time. And you can find us at watch.freetalklive.com. We got a full hour to go here on Free Talk Live. More coming up.
If we've learned anything from recent news, it's that unexpected things are happening. Your gut tells you there's something very wrong going on, and all the evidence suggests that there is. Government emails are hacked. There's talk of how to fight World War III, and trade of grains and food are being disrupted. Those in charge say everything's fine. Stop noticing. But you know better. It's time to invest in self-reliance and emergency food storage now, more than ever. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, is the place you can trust. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contains tasty breakfasts, lunch, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save 25%, plus get free shipping on all their 3-month emergency food kits. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today. It's time to prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com, and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Has your body ever gone low blood sugar, feeling weak, shaky, knowing you better eat something fast? We all know high blood sugar can lead to many metabolic problems. At GCNteam.com, we have a healthy blood sugar pack, focusing on the structure and function of stable blood sugar. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Nothing feels worse than unstable blood sugar. Call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.